Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, we're going to continue with some of what we just talked about in our simulcast. Carol Messer along with Katie Greifeld live here on Bloomberg Business Week, on Bloomberg Radio, on YouTube, and on Bloomberg Originals. Because as we said, right, one of the key focal points for the markets, for investors this week, Katie, is Jay Powell heading to Capitol Hill. 2 days of testimony. He'll have his statement, and then he's going to get a slew of questions, right, from members up on Capitol Hill, and we'll see what he has to say. With us, with some more thoughts on this, is Jonelle Marte. She is Bloomberg News Economics and Federal Reserve reporter, joining us via Zoom from New York City. Jonelle, good to have you here with Katie and myself. So we just talked about this with our TV colleagues. We've all been over it. How is it that you guys are thinking about, and how you are thinking about it specifically, about what Jay Powell will be doing over the next couple of days?
So hi there. It's going to be a really important couple of days here that we will hear from Powell because it's probably going to be his last public remarks before the meeting, right? So I think what we're going to be watching, or what's expected of Powell, is for him to echo what we've been seeing from and hearing from some of his colleagues on the Fed. So the message has really been, first of all, that they're not done raising interest rates, more rate increases to come. And I think some people have also been pointing out that they think interest rates or that they're prepared to take interest rates higher if we continue to see economic data come in really hot, right? So we have seen really blockbuster jobs reports and inflation data showing that it's still very elevated. And thankfully, the Fed will have a few key reports coming in before they make that decision. And that's going to be very key to what they end up doing, and also to what they signal in terms of the how high they think rates will have to go.
So if we expect to hear from, you know, classic Jerome Powell tomorrow, very measured, very thoughtful, I am curious to what the bigger risk is here. What is the more likely risk, at least, you know, from the market's perspective? You know, is there a bigger risk that Jerome Powell accidentally sounds dovish or accidentally sounds hawkish once we actually start getting some questions?
So I think the tone from what we've been getting from Fed officials has been more hawkish than dovish, especially in the past month, where, you know, maybe we thought 6 weeks ago that the economy was starting to slow, that inflation was coming down. And actually, the last couple of sets of data reports have shown us that the economy remains really strong. There's still a lot of demand for workers, and inflation is not slowing down at the pace that people expected. So I think the tone has been hawkish. I think we're likely to see more hawkishness from Powell. But again, the message probably being that they're going to look at the data. Again, these key reports coming in before they make their decision. And what they don't want is for markets to start to believe that inflation is going to always stay this way, for inflation expectations to become unanchored. So that's really the message that they've been trying to deliver, is that we're going to do what it needs to have. We're going to do whatever it needs to be done. to get inflation back down to our 2% target.
All right. So it sounds like, to be fair, it's a little bit more of the same, right? Yeah, we're sticking to that 2% target. We're going to continue to be data dependent. We're going to keep raising rates until we get it right. So I feel like it's going to be more of the same. Is there anything new that we could get in terms of tone or message, Janelle, from Jay Powell?
Well, we do want to hear to see how he will be interpreting the data that comes in. And when they meet again in March, you have to remember they'll be updating their projections for how high they think rates will have to go. So we will be listening for any indication that the dot plot, as it's called, is going to show higher terminal rates. So I think we're going to be listening for those kinds of clues. And the Fed has, at this meeting, that very important tool. So even if they do decide to stick with 25 basis points, which is what the market is expecting and what many officials have been saying that they prefer, if they suggest that they're prepared to take rates higher by showing that in the dot plot, then they can still send a very hawkish message to us.
Wouldn't it be like if they said they could go now back to 50, that would be...
That would be huge.
Right? That would be a different message. Like this whole idea of maybe going higher longer, like I get it. Like I feel like it's a sliding scale, right? Do you feel like it's a little bit of a sliding scale potentially?
Yeah.
But if they jumped all of a sudden and said, well, we might be able to, we might need to do 50 at a meeting, like that to me would be a bit of a shock.
I think so. Well, I mean, if you think about what's priced in.
Yeah.
It would, I mean, it would certainly be a shock. I would say it's not what the market is expecting, though the market has it priced in a small chance of that happening. And some officials, of course, have said, the hawkish officials have said that they wanted to be on the table. But again, I think it's been clear from what we've heard that this measured approach, this 25 basis point increment at this level with rate, where rates are at this point, is what most of the Fed officials will prefer. However, I mean, I don't think it's been taken off the table completely. And so, again, we'll be watching to see what we get from the economic data, not only this before this meeting, but in the coming meetings.
So we're talking a lot about interest rates, which makes sense. That is, you know, their primary lever. Talk to us, though, about quantitative tightening, because in the background of all of this, you do have the Fed's balance sheet shrinking. What is the thinking there? You know, should we expect Powell to get some questions on that? Does quantitative tightening last through the end of 2023? What's the current thinking around the balance sheet?
That's a really good point. So the Fed has been reducing its balance sheet in the background, as they like to say, by up to $90 billion a month. And it seems to be going fairly well. However, reserves, the reserves held at that big banks hold at the Fed, those reserves have been draining. And there's been a lot of liquidity held in the reverse repo facility, which is a program that lets financial firms park some money with the Fed overnight. So there's a little bit of concern among some people in the market that if this money kind of stays in the reverse repo program, but you know, and reserves continue to drain, that the Fed might then have to change course if we see reserves fall too low. But what we've heard from the Fed officials so far is that they're aware of what's going on in the markets, they're watching it, and that they're prepared to make changes if necessary. But that for so far, the program seems to be running smoothly. They're continuing with the balance sheet runoff, but they hope it will stay according to plan. Of course, we could hear from some politicians, not policymakers, politicians on Capitol Hill, you know, questioning Powell about that. And some people are obviously are not huge fans of the Fed's big balance sheet because they say that it's been influencing maybe even the housing market in an unfair way, or they don't like the Fed having, you know, so much, you know, snapping up so many assets. So, I mean, it's certainly something that he'll get questions about. But for now, the message has seemed to be that it's working.
Janelle, does the strength in the, or continued strength, I should say, in the labor market, plus the bounce back that we've seen in the equity market, certainly again this month, kind of give Jay Powell some breathing room to be more hawkish, as you guys were talking about earlier?
It might. So clearly there is some concern that the higher interest rates could hurt the labor market, could cause people to lose their jobs. And that might be something that it is something we've heard about from Democrats, for example, who are, you know, reminding Powell, for example, that, hey, you also have a maximum employment mandate. So while you're worried about inflation, let's make sure that we don't cause undue pain to the economy. But if he gets those kind of remarks, he'll be coming in at a moment where the unemployment rate is at 3.4%. And again, like you said, we're seeing some of a rebound in equity markets. So I think that works in his favor in that sense. But I think that he and some others have said that they're watching wages, they're watching labor markets, and they are expecting probably some weakness in the labor market to take place before they can get their inflation target down to 2%.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Jonelle Marte, Bloomberg News Economics and Federal Reserve reporter, joining us via Zoom from New York City ahead of Jay Powell getting ready to march up to Capitol Hill for 2 days of testimony. What's kind of front and center for you?
I'm interested, of course, to hear his comments on inflation. As we were just talking about, he's probably going to stick to the script. But if you look at some of the measures of inflation expectations, I like to look at break-evens in the bond market, those market-based measures. They've been moving higher. You think about this big sell-off that we've had across the Treasury curve. A lot of that is coming from the break-evens component. So the bond market is once again bracing for higher inflation. It's still very much top of mind. It seems like that immaculate disinflation narrative has sort of died off. So, I mean, anytime Jerome Powell speaks, even if it's expected to stick to script, he's expected to say the same thing. It's still a big event.
Absolutely. And this is going to be it then before the next Fed meeting in terms of what we hear from him. You know, you also had LIBOR cracking 5% for the first time.
Huge.
So a big global rate. And I just think about the ECB's governing council member, Robert Holtzman, saying he backs half-point interest rate hikes at every meeting through July. So it's a global story, and I think about the global impact of central banks continuing to raise rates. Carol Masser, Katie Greifeld, we are Bloomberg Radio.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
A lot of news, as you know, we've been talking about it already, coming out of China overnight. Most notably, China's annual National People's Congress, the first since Beijing brought an abrupt end to 3 years of crippling COVID-zero restrictions, has begun with a modest target for economic growth and few hints of past stimulus extravagance. There's other headlines, but let's get right to our guest. So it's great to have with us to really weed through all of the headlines. Andy Brown, former editorial director at Bloomberg New Economy. He spent 3 decades in Asia as both China editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He leads the China Hub. He is a partner at Brunswick Group, and he joins us via Zoom in New York City. Andy, good to have you here with Katie Greifeld and myself. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just got back from a trip to Beijing and Shanghai. It's great to be with you, Carol and Katie.
Well, great to have you here. So tell us, because there's a bunch of headlines overnight, you know, putting out a growth forecast. What's front and center? And tell us about your trip and kind of what was the mood and kind of general conversation.
Yeah, upbeat. Consumption is up. Beijing is chock full of cars, impossible to move around the city. The shops are full. The restaurants are doing a roaring business. Shanghai, similarly. But the airport, pretty much deserted. The external part of the economy has not picked up. Problems with flights, problems with visas. Very few foreigners in Beijing. That's not expected to pick up until sometime around the summer.
That's interesting. Yeah, the fact that, there's a lot of movement within the country, but in terms of people coming in and out, maybe not so much. Let's get to some of the numbers that came out overnight, because I feel like that really set the tone for trading both in Europe and at the start of the US session. So we look at the economic growth target of around 5% for the year. I know that was a bit disappointing in terms of, what people were expecting. How surprised were you to see a 5% handle?
I wasn't surprised in the slightest. I think it reflects two things. First of all, they wanted to set an undemanding target that they feel confident they can actually meet. That's important for credibility because they missed their growth target last year by a mile because of zero COVID. That's the first thing. But I think more to the point, it reflects the reality that China faces an awesome set of challenges. Really tough problems. I mean, the property market is still in the doldrums. That's 25% of the economy. Local governments are bankrupt because they've spent all of their budget on COVID testing and COVID quarantines and so on. Exports are drying up because of an economic slowdown in the US, Europe, other advanced economies. And of course, the US is killing China's high-tech economy with these bans on semiconductors and sanctions against literally hundreds of some of China's leading tech companies.
So, Andy, this is a government, as you well know, that they do kick in the stimulus when needed. As you said, they've spent a lot of money already. Will they not, if things start to come in, get into trouble, will they not jump start it again with more stimulus?
That game is over.
Is it? Okay.
It's so played out. They're getting less and less bang for their buck when it comes to infrastructure. China simply doesn't need more infrastructure or that much more infrastructure, at least at this stage of its development. The housing market, as they say. So that was the normal playbook, right? I mean, you kind of fire up the furnaces, get the steel mills rolling again, build bridges and opera houses and highways and apartment blocks. That doesn't work. It's going to be the consumer that does the heavy lifting this time around, which for the global economy translates something like great for LVMH, great for Diageo, great for all the consumer luxury companies sell. And their business, by the way, is going gangbusters in China right now and cascading down, not just the first tier cities, second tier cities, but also now down to the third tier cities. Very strong consumer rebound. Not so good if you're a BHP or a Vale.
And that, I mean, the fact that they really want the consumer to drive this, you have to wonder what the inflationary effects are there, what the sort of ripple effects of that could look like. But talk to us a little bit about that focus on the consumer. I mean, how does Beijing actually, make sure it's the consumer that's driving that growth?
They have to turn around the drivers. So now it's all about the consumer. And to do that, they're going to have to retool their whole economy. They're going to have to put more money in people's pockets, and that is going to mean a redistribution of income away from local governments, away from the state sector, towards the household. Now, that could be indirect. It could mean, pumping more money into education, into healthcare, into childcare, or it could mean outright grants. But one way or another, China has to shift the drivers of growth decisively.
And some of the other headlines that came out, Andy, I'm sure you saw them. China looking to boost high-end manufacturing. That's one thing. And then also kind of leaning on and putting more pressure on their own private sector to play a bigger role in establishing technology independence. So they are leaning on a lot of different areas to kind of jumpstart their economy.
Yeah, the private sector, this is the interesting one. And really, it's the contradiction that right at the heart of Xi Jinping's plan to revive the economy. And to revive the economy, they have to revive the confidence of the private sector. These guys create just about all the new jobs in China, and they've been pummeled for the last 3 years, pummeled by the COVID lockdowns, by the assault on the private sector, on the big tech platforms, on whole industries like after-school education, on the real estate sector. Some of the big developers in extreme distress. So that's important. But at the same time, Xi Jinping wants the party in control of everything, top-down control. And that is going to be a big feature of the next 5 years of Xi Jinping's governance. Now, the private sector are looking at that and saying, okay, where do we fit in here? They don't believe that the punishment is over. They like the rhetoric, this rhetoric about, yeah, we believe in you guys, private sector, the markets are open, and so on. But they're not seeing any action right now. And they're very skeptical. Of course, we've seen a big boom in the reopening trade in the market. What I'm hearing from Chinese fund managers, Chinese entrepreneurs, from at least some of them, is this is an opportunity to sell. And some of them are telling me it's a last chance to sell.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Because I was thinking about, all right, you know, we're hearing all these headlines, saw all these headlines over the weekend, but I think about, you know, the missing, you know, top investment banker in China. And I feel like from day to day, you can get news out of China that says, wait, China, you know, officials want more oversight of various industries. And I feel like sometimes it changes from day to day. And I don't know quite what to trust at this point. Bottom line, Andy, I mean, the Chinese government, as you said, more oversight, no doubt about it.
More oversight, more of Xi. Of course, we haven't talked about the big government reorganization that is going to be underway. This is where Xi Jinping gets his third term as president, a ceremonial title, really. He already has real power through his position as head of the party. And of course, he got pretty much unlimited tenure in that job at the end of last year. And now he's going to put all of his loyalists in the key positions within the state apparatus. That means the premier, the vice executive, vice premier in charge of the economy, the head of the central bank, finance ministry, judiciary, and so on and so forth. But they're all going to be working very much under this top-down party-led system. Xi Jinping, the overall direction of travel is very clear. He wants to harden the economy. He wants to build up the country's technological base because he believes there's going to be a long-term, arduous struggle against the United States, and he wants the party to be in charge of that. And frankly, the private sector are going to have to get with the program.
And I just want to make sure I heard it right. Did you say people were saying, like, this is the last time to get out of the market, the Chinese market? Just quickly.
Yeah, people are not convinced that this is sustainable. And what they've all been predicting is, sure, there's going to be a relief rebound when they finally lift COVID, which they've done, lifted COVID zero. But some of the people that I'm talking to are saying, we don't have long-term confidence. A market rebound now is a chance to sell.
All right. Well, we certainly have seen that play out in the Chinese trade here, of those ADRs in the U.S. going coming off some of their highs. Andy, thank you, as always. Andy Brown, partner at Brunswick Group, joining us via Zoom from New York City, understands the Chinese market, as we said, spent some 30 years in Asia as both China editor and columnist for The Wall Street Journal, and former Bloomberg colleague as former editorial director at Bloomberg New Economy. China, I feel like it's a big question mark.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
All right, so Katie, we've talked about some pretty heady stuff. Just talked crypto, we've talked Fed. We thought we'd just kind of take a step back here and take a look into something like the global toy market, because it's massive. It reached nearly $171 billion in 2022, so last year. And by one forecast by iMark Group, forecast to reach $267.9 billion by 2028. So good voice to talk about it. Elizabeth Werner is a QVC guest host, someone who has followed and tracked the global toy industry. She joins us via Zoom from Maryland. Elizabeth, good to have have you here with Katie and myself. You did just attend Toy Fest West, which I don't know. I wasn't very familiar with it, but it is a massive toy trade show. Tell us a little bit about what you saw, because I feel like it's coming on the heels of a disappointing forecast from Hasbro that we got last month. So tell us about kind of the mood and what was being talked about.
Yeah, so actually, thank you for having me, first of all. The mood was really great and really festive. It's really been great for us as an industry to get back together in person. So I think that was part of the excitement. There were over 500 manufacturers from around the world displaying toys for this year. And we saw some great things, a lot of great trends, whether it be more diversity and inclusivity for our children to learn more about that when they're young. Of course, lots of loads and loads of products that come from movies and television shows, teaching our children more about social, emotional learning, a lot of great products for that. Of course, collectibles, gaming. So there were a lot of fun things that we saw there and a lot of excitement.
It's so interesting for me to have this conversation because I just spent the weekend with my niece, who's a year old, and my nephew, who is a year and a half old. So I heard a lot about Bluey. I heard a lot about Cocomelon. When you say, you know, there's this focus around favorite TV, favorite movie characters, name some names here. I need to know what's in vogue.
Yes. So you named two of the very big ones, but you absolutely cannot forget Paw Patrol for that age group as well.
Right.
Yeah, so Paw Patrol is actually celebrating its 10th anniversary. So listen to this. Paw Patrol is airing in 180 countries, in 30 languages, and is in 350 million homes. So we are talking about popularity, not just here, but worldwide. And some of the really fun items that are coming out this year, of course, come directly from the show. So the kids watch the episodes, and then part of their development, imagination, is taking those scenes and reenacting them. So one of the items that I brought with me today, the Paw Patrol Aqua Pups Whale Patroller. This
looks
comes
awesome.
Directly from the show. Yes, so much fun. It comes with Chase and Chase's actual vehicle as well, which can be put into this actual larger vehicle. We could push a button and out it will launch right through the front. So the kids are going to have hours and hours of endless play with this fun item.
Totally want it. I'm just going to put it out there. Elizabeth, I want to go back though to some kind of bread and butter ideas when it comes to, you talked about a lot of enthusiasm out there, and I talked about Hasbro, which came out last month with a gloomy 2023 forecast. And they talked about inflation dragging down demand. They're looking at consumers' pocketbooks and they're saying, okay, they only have so much to spend. So I am curious about some of these big macro ideas, inflation being one, supply chains, which is something that's certainly pinched toy supply chains during the pandemic. How did they come up, or what's being talked about when you dive into those two areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So with inventory, one of the things that we found was, of course, there were supply chain issues throughout the pandemic. But once those supply chain issues sort of fixed themselves, a lot of inventory came in. And at that point, when all that inventory came in and the pandemic was slowing down a bit, there was a backup of inventory everywhere. And so all of the various retailers were finding that they had to get rid of this extra inventory before they could bring new inventory in. And so that backup was really a major problem in the industry. So we are hoping now, as that inventory, they're going through that inventory, we'll be able to bring new inventory in and see some of these great new items for the upcoming year. And of course, inflation has been talked about a lot as well. The one thing that the toy industry is hoping is that families are going to continue to spend more time at home together because of inflation. It's harder to travel, do things out of the house, and hopefully continue to engage in play and a lot of fun with their families.
Let me just ask you about one other thing, big geopolitical China-U.S. relations. So much is made overseas in Asia, and I just wonder how that is maybe impacting where supply chains are when it comes to the manufacturing of toys. We know so much has happened over in China and Asia specifically.
Yeah, so it's true. And a lot of the toys are made there, but toys are being made all over Southeast Asia, South America. And I think that we'll have to see as we move forward with the tensions with China, how that is going to affect our inventory. But right now, things are still moving along as planned.
And Elizabeth, you mentioned that, you know, one of the focuses at Toy Fest West was collectibles. What are kids collecting these days? Because when I was a child, it was Beanie Babies. Those were so yes. hot. Maybe some Tamagotchis as well. What's really right. popular right now?
That's right. We also had Crazy Bones. I don't know if you remember those, but they look like, you know, little tiny oval friends. And we had Pokemon cards. Well, right now, the collectibles are all miniature in size. Not all, but a large, large majority of them. Kids are collecting normal things that they would see in everyday life, but in mini form. And one of those I have right here, actually. This is the MGA Miniverse. Now, MGA has a load of very popular brands, LOL Surprise, Bratz, Little Tykes. Well, they've taken all of those and they've put them into miniature form, little tiny pieces, some of them about the size of a quarter. What's exciting about this line, several of them have lots of fun accessories, but the Make It Mini Food is a huge trend. So I don't know if you've seen on social media, but people making little tiny food is something that has been followed. Well, now our kids and yes, adults are actually making little tiny food. Now this food is inedible, but it will come with all the components. You're gonna make the food, whether it might be donuts or cupcakes or a pie, maybe a shake. Right. You're actually going to create that food. And this is something that the kids are collecting. They want all of it. And it's something that we're really looking forward to this year.
$6.97 on LOL Surprise, the official store. Just found it online. Elizabeth, fun stuff. Thank you so much. Be well, Elizabeth Werner. She's QVC guest host, toy industry follower, knows so much about it, joining us via Zoom from Maryland. Carol Masser, along with Katie Greifeld. And this is Bloomberg Radio.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do, that's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 17 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. Carol Masser along Katie Greifeld live here on Bloomberg Business Week in our Interactive Broker studio on YouTube on Bloomberg Originals. And Katie, bouncing around way off our highs of the session, in fact, just off our lows when it comes to the equity trade, and certainly watching what's going on in Treasuries. We're bouncing up higher as well. That 2-year, as Charlie mentioned, 4.88.
Mm-hmm. We are so close to 4%, really across the curve. You look at the S&P 500, though, like you mentioned, up just a tenth of a percent. It's really hanging on to gains there as meh. Yeah, 17 minutes from the bell. Let's get some more on the action with Mark Barabeau. He is head of global equity over at Jennison Associates. He joins us now on Zoom from Massachusetts. Mark, it's great to have you with us at the start of what's expected to be a pretty big week. We have Jerome Powell tomorrow. We have the jobs report on Friday. What are you looking for? Is there anything that could happen this week that would change the needle for you?
I don't think so. I mean, we have a pretty steady state environment right now, right? I think the market agrees the Fed's going to gradually move rates from here, probably not that much. The economy has been really strong over the last 6 months. Job growth year to date is hundreds of thousands. So it's a pretty good environment fundamentally, although things are slowing at the margin in certain places. So I think we all just have to be patient.
And so I was saying a little bit earlier about the jobs report on Friday. I think this is the first jobs report where I've been more excited to see the revision than I am to see the actual number. Because you remember what we got in January's report, 500,000 jobs out of, I don't know, felt like nowhere. What are you looking for in Friday's payrolls print? Are you like me? Are you not too excited about the headline?
Yeah, I'm not too excited about the headline. I think we've been in a very strong job market for quite some time now. Employers are looking for people everywhere, seemingly, but Silicon Valley. So it's a pretty good environment out there. I'm not too excited about it one way or the other.
All right. Okay, so that's an interesting perspective. Having said that, you manage the PGIM Jennison Global Opportunities Fund. It's beat nearly all of its peers over the past 5 years, returning annually on average almost 9%. You're also involved in the management of the International Opportunities Fund, also outperforming over the past 5 years. You also are involved in the Emerging Markets Equity Fund. So a global perspective, an international perspective. When you look at the markets right now, where do you want to commit new money? Is it outside the United States or inside the United States?
Oh, I think it's a collection of everything. We don't look at it regionally because I think that's very dangerous. Then you're relying on top-down macro things, and I don't think those really matter today. What really matters today is unique demand drivers for individual companies. That's what drives our investment decision-making, and I think that's what's going to drive the markets this year. So that's our focus.
What are unique demand drivers, Mark?
Well, there's a few today that are pretty exciting. Let's start with number one, this huge transformational move in mobility. That's both the move to electric vehicles and autonomous driving. That's going to be the biggest transformation we see in the next 5 years worldwide for any big industry. And of course, the leader is here in the U.S., Tesla. So there you get leadership here, and so all of a sudden you're making a U.S. investment. But it's because they're the driver of the big change.
So there's two interesting things there that you said. First of all, that, you know, this isn't about macro, but it feels like this has been such a macro-driven market over the past few months.
Oh, yeah.
Tesla. Let's talk about Tesla because, I don't know, it feels like if you compare it to other automakers, it's so expensive. It's so richly valued. And I mean, your point is taken on the fact that it's the leader. But how do you sort of reconcile the fundamentals with where the stock is actually trading?
Forward looking, what, PE on Tesla of almost 49? You look at something like a GM, it's not quite 7.
It's a lot of daylight there.
Not apples to apples. We can put that out there. Anyway, go ahead, Mark.
Well, yeah, no, that's fine. If GM could grow their sales and earnings 70% in the next 2 years, it would have a high multiple too, but it can't. So, you know, that's what the market's looking at. I'm just looking at consensus numbers, and it's 35 times next year's earnings, so not too bad, and 63% growth in top line. So over those 2 years, so that's pretty good, and it's very profitable, as you know. The key thing for Tesla is it has the capacity, the battery capacity, to meet demand today in the marketplace for electric vehicles, and the others are all playing catch up. And some of them have some very good products on the market, but they can't make enough of them to make a difference. So we think, for example, like the Model Y this year will challenge the Toyota Corolla for being the number one selling vehicle in the world, never mind electric. It was number four last year. So that kind of demand inflection is very unique. We're at that big curve of adoption swing where you get consumers all of a sudden clamoring for these products. And of course, Tesla has slashed pricing, which is why the stock, one of the reasons it did so poorly in the fourth quarter. But as a result, demand is responding. So you kind of want to be positioned in companies that are going to deliver a very strong top line, regardless of what the Fed's doing. Nobody buying an EV cares what the Fed's doing.
All right. So you like Tesla. We're going to actually talk with our Dana Hall about who covers Elon and all things Tesla. Real quickly, got 20 seconds. NVIDIA, it's been on a tear. It's up more than 60%. It's the AI craze. You're buying into AI just quickly.
Oh, yeah, we're buying into AI. This may go November of last year when ChatGPT hit the market in such a big way. It may go down in history as the iPhone moment. So we think artificial intelligence, you know, this generative AI from these large scale language processors like OpenAI, are going to lead to huge innovations in software applications and consumer applications going forward. But it's accelerating now. It's not futuristic. It's not like the metaverse, which, you know, who cares?
Right. This is actually... Mark, we got to run. Mark Barabeau, he is head of global equity at Jennison Associates, joining us via Zoom from Massachusetts. Carol Masser, Katie Greifeld, this is Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.